Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to finish up the muscular system by discussing some of the muscles in the lower limb and gluteal regions. Let me also take a minute to say one of the reasons I've decided to record this part of the muscular system is because in class, rolling through 40 muscles, one after the other, origin, insertion, action, there's no way to really do it justice because we don't have enough time. And to just rattle them off is just boring and not helpful. So by putting these in tapes, I spend much more time giving you some extra tidbits and some mnemonics and memorization techniques. So with that being said, away we go. Our first muscle of today is called the sartorius muscle, and yes, it is the longest muscle in the human body. You should know that. It sounds like a potential test question, or maybe it's something mommy and daddy are going to ask you because you're a big, bad AMP 2 student. Often I start off with the root words, don't I? But I'm not real happy about this one here because the root word sartor means tailor, and it used to be called the tailor's muscle. Because in the old days, people went to the tailor, I guess, to have their clothes made or fitted or something like that. And the tailor would sit in a certain position, which would require use of this muscle. But, of course, I don't know anybody who goes to the tailor anymore, so I don't find that useful. I have my own memorization techniques coming up, so don't worry about that. Let's go over to the right side of this figure and take a look at the picture from your book. This is an anterior view of the right thigh. Here is the sartorius muscle. It's a big, long, strap-like muscle. You'll see both in lecture and lab, there's a couple of strap-like muscles. I just remember the sartorius with an S is the strap to the side with an S. Let's check it out. Always got to do the origin first. And take a look up top here because that's where it is. The origin's from the upper outer surface of the ilium. It goes from the ilium, crosses over the hip joint, and then diagonally it goes across the thigh and eventually across the knee joint where it finally inserts medially into the upper end of the tibia. Well, by having this visual in mind, it's hard to figure out, I think, especially for beginners, what the actions of this muscle are going to be. It crosses two joints, so you know it's going to have multiple actions. But let me first describe it in words. Then I'll show you in a visual, and hopefully with a visual you'll never forget. So here it goes, the words first. Actions are flexes and laterally rotates the thigh, and then at the knee joint it flexes the leg. What does that mean? It means it pulls the knee up and out, as in what we used to call in the old days sitting Indian style. I don't know if they still use that term or if y'all know what that means, but don't worry, I have a picture coming up. And here it is. You see that fellow there studying anatomy? Looks like he's really into it. Maybe a little bit too much into it. As a matter of fact, the more I look at him, he's a little bit scary. But let's focus on his legs. Look at the way his legs are positioned. The movements required to sit like that are exactly the movements that the sartorius muscle performs. So that's worth a thousand words. Sartorius is a very long muscle, but not a very strong one because it's so thin and strap-like. So there you go. Hopefully you'll never forget the sartorius muscle because I don't think you'll be able to get this image out of your brain. Let's move on. Here comes the gracilis muscle. Gracil means thin, and it is a thin muscle. Let's take a look to your figure to the right. And again, it's an anterior view of the right thigh. The arrow, both the black one and now my white one, are on this muscle. It is a thin muscle. I remember this one both for lecture and lab because gracilis starts with a G and it's in the groin with a G. So gracilis is in the groin. Sartorius is the strap to the side. Don't mix them up. So the gracilis, let's check out the basics, starting with the origin. Well, it's a muscle in the groin, and it originates from one of the hip bones that's in the middle of the groin, specifically the pubis. So origin, you write down pubis. Then these muscle fibers extend down along the inner surface of the thigh and insert medially in, again, the upper end of the tibia. So a similar insertion with the sartorius, yes? What about the actions? This adducts with a D, A-D, deducts the thigh. What does that mean? I remember the D helps me because adduct means draw something towards the midline. So this draws the thighs towards the midline. You know, in the old days, there used to be a commercial for an exercise device called the Thighmaster. I don't know if they have that anymore. But when you put it between your thighs and you squish it together, right, the thighs moved in towards the midline, that was adducting the thigh, and that's what this muscle does. It's not a very powerful one, though. When you see it in lab, hopefully, you'll see it's a thin, very weak muscle. But in any case, gracilis is in the groin, and it adducts the thigh. But here we come now to some Mac Daddy adductors, the adductor longus and the adductor magnus. How'd they get their names? Well, because they both adduct or draw towards the midline. The longus, the person who found it years ago at an autopsy, I guess, thought it looked long, so they called it the longus. And the magnus, like magnum, means big, so the person who found it at the autopsy saw that it was big, and it is big, so that's how it got its name. We'll go to the figure to the right again, anterior view, right thigh. And the arrow is on the adductor longus, right in there. You cannot see the adductor magnus from this view because the magnus is also more medial and deeper, so we can't see it. I have another slide coming up. Don't worry. What about origin? Ah, they also originate from the pubis. Note that all the three thigh adductors we're going to talk about are all in the groin, and they all originate from the pubis, which is the hip bone in the middle of the groin. So that's cool for memorization techniques. Insertion, love this one. These muscle fibers actually head towards the femur, specifically towards the linea aspera of the femur. Please recall that that's that big, long, roughened ridge that goes along the back side of the femur. And why do we have roughened ridges on bones? For strong muscle attachments. These adductors both attach there. They're very big and powerful. You want a strong attachment point or they could probably rip off. Similar to the way, as a matter of fact, the deltoid muscle attached to the deltoid tuberosity. We have rough raised areas for strong attachment. To make an analogy, at home, if you're trying to maybe have things stick on the wall or whatever, if it's a smooth, glossy surface, it's hard to make things stay up. So a lot of times you'll sand something down to make it stick better. So it's beautiful the way the design matches the purpose. We have a rough area for much tougher attachment. Actions, well, the name gives it away. You can't miss this one on the test. The adductors adduct the thigh. Before we leave this slide, you saw an arrow pop up because I must discuss a critical piece of anatomy that you must know. It has such clinical significance and relevance to real life that we'll talk about. You need to know it backwards and forwards for not just a test, but for out there in the real world in healthcare. That triangular shaped deal that's outlined there, that has a name. And some genius called it the femoral triangle because it's a triangle in the femoral region. What are the borders of the femoral triangle? And if you're in surgery or going in surg tech or anything like that, you're going to have to know it. Here comes the sartorius, forms one border. The adductor longus forms the other border. And finally, this ligament called the inguinal ligament forms the top border, if you will. And that is the femoral triangle as far as its borders. What is in there? Well, I got a memorization technique for you. You have to navigate your way from lateral to medial to understand what's in there. So the N stands for a nerve. There's going to be a femoral nerve. Then there's going to be for the A, there's a femoral artery. And then there's going to be, for V, a femoral vein. So nerve, artery, vein, that's the NAV. As you navigate across medially the femoral triangle. What's so important about that? Well, a couple clinical examples. Cardiac catheterizations are performed to diagnose and treat certain disorders of the heart. You can analyze the vasculature in and around the heart. You can check the pressures in the chambers of the heart. Certain procedures can be performed as well. So you must understand how to access the heart. For example, if you want to access the left side of the heart, you will learn when we get there in the vessel section that you will slip the catheter into the femoral artery. If you want to access the right side of the heart, for whatever reason, you will slip the catheter in the femoral vein. So yes, this is very important. And then who hasn't heard of a hernia? Everyone's heard of hernias. What are hernias? In general, a hernia means a part of your body is pooching into another part of your body where it doesn't belong. Hernia is almost always, or I should say most often, referred to a herniation of a piece of the small intestine. And this is one of the sites where you'll see them. There's a permanent sort of a weak spot right underneath that inguinal ligament. And if someone strains or stresses too hard or lifts too heavy of a weight, you can actually force a piece of small bowel under that ligament and into the femoral triangle, in which case some people call those femoral hernias, or you may call them inguinal hernias. I like the root word inguinal, by the way. Inguinal sounds like in the groin, doesn't it? Well, inguinal means in the groin. So let the names help you. These pictures are some of my favorite from your textbook. I use them a lot. These are the deep views of muscles with a lot of stuff stripped away so you can actually see these parts better. In this case, we have an anterior deep view of the thigh adductors, and it is the right thigh region that we're looking at. Look at the beauty of this. We can see very clearly the origin on the pubis of all three of our adductors. So all three of our adductors, which are kind of in the groin region, all originate from the hip bone that's in the groin region called the pubis. Here we have the adductor longus. Then we have the adductor magnus. Again, even though it's much bigger and meatier, it's buried deeper and more medial, so it's tough to see even in this cutaway view. And then finally, our thin strap-like muscle that runs along the inside of the groin called the gracilis. Here shows the insertion point of the gracilis very nicely as well on the medial side of the upper end of the tibia. But remember, the Mac Daddy adductors, the ones that really do the work, they're headed towards the linea aspera. That's that big, long, linear, roughened ridge on the back side of the femur. And don't worry, I got a better picture of that coming up. While we're here, put up a question for fun and also clinical relevance. What is a pulled groin? You might hear that. Maybe I'll put it on the test. Well, when you hear the term pulled groin, it almost always refers to the fact that someone has strained one of these muscles in the groin area. They have strained one of their thigh adductors. Now you know. Ooh, that was cute. Hey, if you missed that, maybe I should do that again. Let me back up. Try it again. Whoa, yeah. Okay, so I really like the linea aspera, apparently, because I worked on that advanced PowerPoint technique for about an hour before I got it right. Hope you enjoyed it. But what we need to focus on is the right half of this slide. We have a posterior view of the bones in the right thigh, and here's our old friend, the linea aspera. That's where our Mac Daddy adductors attach, and you see that that is a nice, strong attachment point. Don't forget it. None of these little sections are complete without Muscle Man. Got to do the gross anatomy. I think I got some arrows popping up so we can sort of quiz ourselves. Let's do this one first. Boom! There's the strap to the side, right? The one that crosses both the hip joint and the knee joint. This is, of course, if I ask you, the sartorius muscle. Did y'all get that right? Next one. Name that muscle. there it is. That's one of our adductors, right? One of our groin muscles. That's the adductor longus. Remember, you can't see the magnus, even though it's more medial, because it's also more medial and deeper and harder to see. Since I've just pointed to those two muscles, we have to go to this structure next, because those two muscles, along with the inguinal ligament, they form the triangle, right? It's not the Bermuda Triangle. This is the femoral triangle. Be able to navigate your way across it, because there's a femoral nerve, artery, and vein there. And the vein you can see beautifully in this picture. Finally, I think the last quiz question I put on this slide was that thin strap in the groin. That's one of our thigh adductors, a weak one. You will call that the gracilis. You were waiting for this, weren't you? I've been talking about this adductor for a long time. Finally, we could see it. We've stripped away a lot of the other muscles to get to it, and that is the adductor magnus. You can see how it got its name. It is humongous. And this powerful thigh adductor, like all thigh adductors, originates from the pubic bone. And then this one, along with the longest, remember, is headed towards the linea aspera on the back side of the femur. And you could kind of get that idea from this photograph. So I really love this picture. Moving on, next we have the quadriceps femoris. But when I'm out with my buddies working out, of course, we all just call it the quads because it just sounds cool. You probably heard that term, but that's what it refers to. Look what's up top. May as well hit it right now. Largest muscle in the body. Sounds like a potential test question, doesn't it? And you just want to be smart if you're on one of them TV shows like Jeopardy or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and you're up there, don't embarrass me. If you took my course, largest muscle in the body, you're going to say the quads. As a matter of fact, this muscle group is so big, it's made up of four separate muscles. And you might have guessed that because the root word quad means four. Like if someone has quads, they have four at a time, right? And femur or femoris refers to the femur. So maybe you're guessing these muscles are in the thigh on the femur. And you'd be exactly right. Let's take a look first at the one that runs right down the middle of the pack on the surface. It's called the rectus femoris. I think I have an arrow on it. There we go. Know your root words and they'll help you. Rectus means straight. Femur means femur. So straight down the middle. Look at how those muscle fibers or the grain of the meat runs. That is the rectus femoris. We'll continue on with our usual players, which include the origin. This muscle is the only one of the quads that originates from the ilium. It's the only quad that crosses the hip joint. So that's the odd man out there, of course, you need to remember. What about insertions? Well, let's take a look first. I'll trace these muscle fibers down. Here goes the grain of the beef. The muscle fibers go to something called the quadriceps tendon because it's the tendon of the quadriceps. And then it inserts in the patella. The patella then has ligaments that extend from it, and somebody called that the patellar ligament. That's not rocket science. And that patellar ligament inserts in the tibial tuberosity, another roughened ridge of bone for strong anchoring of these powerful muscles. So a lot of words off to the side there, but really they tell you exactly what and where there are, and I don't think you'd miss it even if I asked you to like put it all in the right order sort of thing. Actions, well, this crosses two joints, right? It crossed the hip joint and it crossed the knee joint, so it's going to have double actions. I don't think it's too hard to figure out. With the visual in mind, with the basic knowledge that you have, you should be able to get this correct. And the actions are, number one, flexes the thigh at the hip, kind of like raising your knee up towards your chest, and also extends the leg at the knee. That's kind of like kicking your leg out. I threw down a question at the bottom of the slide for fun, for clinical relevance. but it might appear on the test. Everyone should know this. You've heard the term Charlie horse. In general terms, all a Charlie horse is really is cramping of a muscle. Usually it happens in the calf muscle. It may occur due to dehydration or electrolyte deficiencies, but it can happen in the quads as well. So that's a Charlie horse. More quads. Remember, quads means four, and we only done one, so let's do the last three. And the last three are the vastus lateralis, the vastus intermedius, and the vastus medialis. And they all tell you exactly what and where they are. What does vast mean, like the vast universe? It means humongous. And then the root word lateral means to the side. Inter means like in between or in the middle. So the intermedius is sort of buried in the middle of all this mess. And then medialis means medial. So they tell you exactly where they are. Let's go ahead and roll through them one at a time. First comes the, boom, the vastus lateralis. Because it's part of the quads, that's the big one on the side. Little clinical point here for you coming up. This is one of the common sites of an intramuscular or IM injection. We talked about giving one in the deltoid muscle a little ways back. Here's another place to give them. You've seen people get it in the thigh. My son got four at once in the thigh the other day. Didn't even blink an eye or cry once. I couldn't believe it. But in any case, this is the choice muscle in the thigh to hit with an IM injection. So get to know the location. And sure enough, if you've been paying attention to this anterior view of the right thigh, in order to see the vastus intermedius, the rectus femoris actually has been cut away, hasn't it? Last one, vastus medialis. Why? Because it's the big one, medial. Really not that hard. Let's go ahead and do our basics. Origin. All three of these originate from the proximal end of the femur, so from the top end of the femur. That means they don't cross the hip joint, okay, because they start on the femur. Then insertion, same thing as the other slide. They insert in the patella via the quadriceps tendon and then the tibial tuberosity via the patellar ligament. They are exactly what and where they say they are. I traced it on the last slide. Go back to that if you wish to review it. Actions. Remember, these three only cross the knee, so that's where they have their action. And again, it is extend the leg at the knee, like kicking your leg out. Beautiful views here to help it really sink in. These visuals really, I think, put the details together and allow us to have better images ingrained in our brain. So here's a right thigh and anterior view, cut away a lot of stuff. So we're looking at some deep isolated muscles. Let's check out the quads. First one on the left is the rectus femoris. It goes straight over the middle of the femur. Remember, that's the only one that originates on the ilium and therefore crosses the hip joint. Otherwise, it's on its way down through the quadriceps tendon to the patella, to the patellar ligament, to the tibial tuberosity. Next up, big one on the side, vastus lateralis. Key thing to remember here, originates from the femur. Insertion is exactly the same as what I just said. What about vastus intermedius? Again, starts on the femur. Insertion the same as I've already gone over. Vastus medialis, it's medial, originates from the femur and crosses the knee joint exactly the same way as I've discussed at least twice already. Well, how do I put this together? Because I know there's a lot to remember in A&P, and that's just part of the deal, okay? We got a lot of information to absorb before we start treating patients. But I need, you know, cute, quick, easy things for my pea brain to remember. So I threw in some clip art down there, not just for fun, but this is the way I remember it. The quads are the football kicking muscle. The quads are the kicking muscle. Think about it. Look at this guy kicking the football. And thank goodness football season right around the corner. Here is the thigh that is being flexed at the hip That's the job of the rectus femoris. And here's the leg being extended at the knee. And all four of the quads contribute to that. So, in summary, the quads are the football kicking muscles. Hopefully that'll help you remember it. Maybe forever. Love saying this one. Check it out. Tensor fascia lata. Sounds like something to order at Starbucks, right? I would like a tensor fascia lata with extra sugar, drizzle with caramel, hold the whip. Anybody else thinking that? Or is it just me? Maybe it's just me, so let me move on. Here it is again on the anterior view of the right thigh. On the lateral surface, this is the muscle. This is the tensor, so to speak. Yeah, when I'm out on the weekends with my friends drinking Starbucks, we don't call it the tensor fascia lata. We just call it the tensor. So I'm going to say that during the rest of this slide. Here's the tensor. Find it in the lab. I hope you will. It's a small, kind of flat, kind of triangular shaped muscle seen here with the black arrow, and also I'm tracing it with my right arrow as well. I like the name because tensor tells me it's going to tense something, it's going to pull on something, and it's going to pull on something called the fascia lata. What is fascia lata? Well, fascia, you know, is dense connective tissue, often associated with muscles. Lata means broad or flat, and here is the fascia lata. It's essentially made up in large part of the tendon of the tensor fascia lata. So the tensor fascia lata pulls on the fascia lata. Let's look at it in more detail. Origin, you must know, shown here beautifully, is again the iliac crest. So it is crossing the hip joint. Insertion, follow it down. It goes all the way down the lateral surface of the thigh and inserts in the lateral condyle of the tibia via something called the iliotibial tract with a red star. That must mean I think it's important some way, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. Even with the tremendous knowledge base that you have now, I think looking at this muscle, it's hard to figure out what the action might be, so I'll just give it to you. The action is, believe it or not, it flexes the thigh. Now, this muscle is small, it's thin, it's not very powerful. We have, of course, the quad, specifically the rectus femoris, that's so tremendously powerful in flexing the thigh that this just pales in comparison. Let's get more detail on this fascia lata. So I put an arrow on it. The fascia lata also kind of helps me because it runs on the lateral part of the thigh. My arrow's on it now, and remember, the fascia lata is part of the iliotibial tract. What is the iliotibial tract? You should know. It's this really strong connective tissue band-like deal that runs most prominently on the lateral part of the thigh. The iliotibial tract is made up of primarily the tendon of the tensor fascia lata, as well as some tendon fibers from the big buttocks muscle called the gluteus maximus. But why am I so focused on it? After all, I told you the tensor wasn't a very strong or important muscle. Well, here's the deal. Someone who understood the anatomy and physiology we've been discussing said, hey, I'm not taking this course just to get an A. I'm trying to help people. And if he just said this is not a very strong muscle and we have this connective tissue strong band on the lateral part of the thigh, just barely underneath the skin where it's readily accessible, maybe I could use that to my advantage to help someone. And sure enough, the clinical significance is surgeons, usually plastic surgeons, are more than happy to harvest nice pieces of this fascia lata and rebuild certain parts of the body in reconstructive surgery. And you're wondering, well, yeah, but what's going to happen when we can't flex the thigh? Well, of course you can. You got the rectus femoris. I mean, you're not going to miss a hunk of fascia lata. Don't worry about it. Use it to help people. Muscle Man here again. Gross Anatomy, love to put it together with the real deal. So away we go. Arrow pops up here. And again, there comes our quadriceps in the middle. That's called the rectus femoris. Next one is the vastus lateralis, because it's the big one off to the side. And then we got the big quad that's medial. We call that the vastus medialis. Let's not forget about our friend we just talked about. There's the tensor. Okay, if you want to be in my group on the weekends drinking Pepsi, just call it the tensor. It's technically the tensor fascia lata because it's tensing or pulling on this connective tissue tough band called the fascia lata, which is on the lateral part of the thigh, which runs right on top of the vastus lateralis. And again, it's easy to get a chunk of that to do reconstructive surgery, and your body won't miss it. Looks like we're breaking into the buttocks region. This is the muscle called the gluteus maximus. Gluteus refers to the buttocks. Maximus means big, and this is the big buttocks muscle. Notice I'm circling the figure off to your right. This is a posterior view of the gluteal region. And we see here the arrow is on this humongous muscle. That is the gluteus maximus. As a matter of fact, it's so big, it's got a wide spread of origins. That's kind of how, remember, this is the biggest one. So it originates from a wide spread of things, including from the ilium, as well as the sacrum and the coccyx. So big origins to remember. What about the insertion? Well, we follow the grain of the beef laterally, and those fibers insert into the lateral part of the thigh. But most importantly, this muscle is going to have a very strong insertion on the linea aspera of the femur. Needs a real strong attachment point because, oh boy, this puppy here is big. And it's powerful. With that visual and with the anatomical landmarks in mind, we're now ready to talk about action. And when this muscle contracts and it yanks primarily on that linea aspera of the femur, what does it do? It extends the thigh at the hip. In other words, straightens out that thigh at the hip. And yes, it's very powerful if anyone asks you. You might also be able to guess by looking at this picture, it has a component of being able to laterally rotate the thigh as well. I hope this picture helps us remember the actions of this muscle. I used someone from the military. Want to take this moment to thank all members of the military for their service. But check out how he's standing at attention. And you know he is standing nice and straight and strong and tall. So to have that thigh extended straight like that, he's using his powerful gluteus maximus muscle. Maybe there's even a little bit of lateral rotation of the thigh there as well. Here comes the gross anatomy. I love these pictures. Here's the real deal, so to speak. Obviously a posterior view, and the red arrows on the big buttocks muscle. If I ask you to name that muscle, everyone's going to say gluteus maximus. We're ready for our next muscle in the buttocks now, which is called the gluteus medius. Gluteus tells you, of course, it's one of the buttocks muscles. There's a total of three of them we're going to look at in our course. And I let the word medius help me remember where this one is, because of the three, this one is sort of sandwiched in the middle. We almost have a buttocks muscle sandwich, so to speak, with the maximus is the big one on the outside, and the medius is the one sandwiched in the middle. The arrow is on it right now. There is the gluteus medius. Sort of looks like it has a triangular sort of shapish thing going on in this picture. Origin, clearly from the ilium. I mean, you can see the ilium in this visual. And if we follow those fibers, the grain of the meat, downwards towards the insertion point, you will find that it will eventually insert on one of the most important landmarks in bone anatomy, the greater trochanter of the femur. Remember that big knobby structure on the upper end of the femur? Well, that's for muscle attachment. Again, it's a nice strong anchoring point. So that we can do what? And I bet you could figure it out. Just picture our origin again, you know, is the fixed point, and then the insertion is where we're getting the movement. Well, if you contract that thing, what's it going to do? It's going to swing your thigh out, which really means the action is to abduct the thigh, take it away from the midline. And if anyone ever asks you, it's the most powerful abductor of the thigh. Clinical tidbit at the bottom of this slide, I have to throw this one in. This is the third and last place I think we'll discuss in the human body where we like to do intramuscular injections. You will learn how to access and find the gluteus medius muscle. You will use the greater trochanter of the femur as one of your landmarks. So no, this is not Trivial Pursuit. You gotta know this stuff, because if you put that buttocks injection in the wrong place, you might stab their nerve, specifically their sciatic nerve, and they might have pain, numbness, tingling, paralysis, or what have you, and they're not going to like you very much, and there's always a lawyer in the family, and you'll never win that case. So yes, you have to know this stuff. It's for real. And that's for real. Here is a picture where we have the gluteus maximus has been removed so we could see the buttocks muscle that's kind of sandwiched in the middle, called the gluteus medius, that I'm tracing with my white arrow. This is where we often put the buttocks injections. Don't ding this nerve. That big nerve, the biggest nerve in the human body, is the sciatic nerve. And if you ding it, you will never win that case in court. Up come some arrows. Name that muscle. Well, you know it's the gluteus medius. Another arrow coming up. It is, of course, the sciatic nerve. Last of the three gluteus buttocks muscles is the gluteus minimus, because it is the smallest one. And we've had to peel away, look, the gluteus maximus. We've had to peel away the gluteus medius, which is the middle of our buttocks muscle sandwich. And then finally, the deepest, innermost, smallest one is the gluteus minimus. Let's go ahead and do our thing. First, the origin, once again, is from the ilium. Yeah, origin from the ilium. Did you notice that all the gluteal muscles originate from the ilium? I know the maximus had more because it was bigger, but they all had something in common. All buttocks muscles had an origin from the ilium. We trace the grain of the beef down, shown very nicely here in this posterior view of the right thigh, and there it's where it hooks onto the greater trochanter of the femur. Same as the gluteus medius, by the way. And therefore, what would you guess? I mean, if the origin and insertion are the same on a muscle, aren't the actions going to be the same? Well, yeah, of course. So the action is abduct the thigh. It pulls the thigh out, but it's not nearly as powerful as the gluteus medius is. I threw a little mnemonic at the bottom of this slide for a little bit of fun, but also to help us remember things. So here it comes. Do you get it? I mean, do you really get it? Well, what does that stand for? The G stands for gluteal muscles, the I stands for they all have an origin on the ilium, and the T stands for they all insert either directly on the greater trochanter or somewhere on the femur down below that region. That helps my pea brain to remember it. I hope it works for some of you as well. Time to move on to our beautiful pictures. This kind of neat one, because not only did they strip all the overlying muscles away, they've also colorized it so we see the isolated muscle by its lonesome. And sure enough, this is the gluteus minimus. It's the deepest, smallest of the three. And I think you gorgeously see the origin from the ilium and the insertion on the greater trochanter. So this is one of those pictures that I just really like. Now to move on to another big group of muscles called the hamstrings. When I'm out in the gym with my friends pumping iron, working out, we just call these the hammies. So if you want to be cooling in my group on the weekend, you call them the hammies. But on the test, you put hamstrings. It's a big group of muscles, actually made up of three muscles in total that we'll look at. Here's our figure again from your textbook. Posterior view, right thigh, and here are the three hammies. I'll trace them. 1, 2, 3. That's from lateral to medial. Let's check them out. First one is the big one on the back of the femur called the biceps femoris, and that's how I remember it. The big one on the back of the femur is the biceps femoris. Maybe that memorization technique will help you in lab as well. And it's extremely powerful. Check out the origin and insertion. It starts or originates from the ischial tuberosities. Remember that roughened ridge on your ischium called the ischial tuberosities? If you're sitting down right now, you're sitting on your ischial tuberosities. And the roughened ridge is a firm attachment point. Next comes the insertion. Let's follow the grain of the beef down. Here comes the muscle tendon. Head it laterally where it inserts in some of the leg bones, actually into both leg bones, including the head of the fibula and the lateral condyle of the tibia. So notice the biceps femoris inserts on both leg bones laterally. With that information at hand and the visual in our brain, we should be able to figure out the actions of this muscle. Recall that we have crossed two joints, both the hip joint and the knee joint. So we're going to have double action. What are they? Number one action is flex the leg at the knee. That's like pulling your foot up towards your buttocks. The second action is extending, that's straightening, the thigh at the hip. If you're paying attention, this is the exact opposite action of the rectus femoris. The rectus femoris was the football kicking muscle. Remember in the quads? The biceps femoris is just the opposite. So they are antagonists. Maybe that will help you remember.
Well, there's three hamstrings, so that must mean I have two to go. Let's go ahead and do them. They are the semitendinosus and the semimembranosus. The semitendinosus, labeled first, got its name because you could see it and touch it and find out that when you do your dissections, I hope, that it's got a cord-like or tendon-like shape, and that's how it got its name. It's shaped like a tendon, so they called it the semitendinosus. If you go more medially, you run into the semimembranosus, which is the last of the three hammies, if you will. I remember the semimembranosus labeled here with an M in it because the membranosus is more meaty. You'll see it's meatier, bigger, beefier, and it's more medial, and that's the way I never mix them up. Origins. Oh, notice again, all hammies originate from the ischial tuberosity. So just picture some hammies hanging from the ischial tuberosities. I don't know, string up some hams from the ischium. Will that help? That's a weird visual. I don't know, but corny stuff sticks, doesn't it? Insertion. Notice that these last two hamstrings have a common insertion. They go medially, right, check out the grain of the beef and the tendons of the muscle. They go medially and insert in the upper end of the tibia, including the medial condyle of the tibia. So look how these hamstrings sort of diverge at the knee, with the biceps going laterally and the other two hammies going medially. Actions? Well, they cross two joints, so it's got to have double action again, right? exactly the same as what we did on the other slide. Flex the leg at the knee, extend the thigh at the hip. So the hammies aren't that bad to remember. They're all hanging from the ischial tuberosity, and they all flex the leg and extend the thigh.
Coming up next, some of my favorite visuals to put all this together and help it stick in my melon. Posterior deep views of isolated muscles in the right thigh. I love it when they sort of strip all the unnecessary stuff away so we can see what we were just talking about. Notice the key points here. Number one, all three hammies are hanging from the ischial tuberosities. That's the origin with triple stars. Three hammies, three stars, all hanging from the ischium. From their origin, here goes first the biceps femoris, big one on the back of the femur. Recall that one goes laterally to the head of the fibula and the lateral condyle of the tibia. Then comes the semitendinosus, because it's shaped like a cord-like tendon, and its tendon inserts medially, including the medial condyle of the tibia. Likewise, semimembranosus runs down, follow its tendon. Again, it diverges medially to the medial condyle of the tibia. So beautiful visual. Love these deep views that are cut away. Threw down a question there at the bottom of the slide for fun, also for some clinical relevance. And yeah, that's fair game for the test, isn't it? What are pulled hamstrings? You've heard of that before. Well, it means you pulled the hamstrings. You got it. It is exactly what it says it is. It ain't rocket science, or I wouldn't do it. It means you strained some of these muscle fibers in your hammies. It most often happens in athletes such as runners. Maybe you've seen it in the Olympics where they come out of those starting blocks hard, powerful, fast, and then you see them pull up, right? Pull their hammies. That's where you're going to see it probably most often. And here we are again with Muscle Man. It's so wonderful to look at the real deal. I hope you enjoy the cadaver pictures as well. I wish we could dissect them in lab, but it just ain't so. I'm going to use this slide to help us review the hammies in detail. I've got some extra mnemonic devices that help me remember this forever. I hope they work for you. So away we go. Let's do a little pop quiz. Up comes an arrow on that first one right there. Which one is it? I hope you're all thinking biceps femoris. Remember, it's the big one on the back of the femur. For right now, I'm just going to put a big capital B on that. You'll see where I'm going with this in just a minute. But remember, its origin, like all the hammies, they originate from the ischial tuberosities. Then we follow it down to its tendon, to its insertion, where it goes laterally and inserts on both leg bones laterally. The B helps me there. B for biceps femoris, inserts on both fibula and the tibia. Let's move medially across this thigh, and here we come to the next hamstrings. That one, if you could see it and touch it, you would see that it is shaped like a cord-like tendon, and that's how it got its name. You guessed it, semitendinosus. Just putting a capital S on it right now. Its tendon goes down and medially and inserts on the tibia. The S helps me because S tells me it only inserts on a single bone. Finally, next muscle comes up on the quiz. Name that muscle. You know the one that's meaty and medial with an M in it. You're all going to call that the semimembranosus. I'm just going to slap a capital S on that for right now. Remember, both the semitendinosus and the semimembranosus with an S only have a single insertion on only a single leg bone, the medial side of the tibia. What's also kind of cool here
as we're looking down at the tendons crossing the knee joint, the tendon of the biceps femoris goes laterally, the tendons of the semitendinosus and membranosus go medially, and did you ever notice there's that hollowed out area on the back of the knee, and it's sort of bordered by those tendons. I'm not telling you to do this because you're never supposed to do anything I tell you to do. You're just supposed to learn and understand the stuff and be able to apply it. But if you were to feel in the back of your knee with your leg slightly bent, you'd feel those tendons both laterally and medially, and they kind of wall off that hollowed out area in the backside of your knee. That actually has a name right back in there. That's called the popliteal fossa. A fossa, you know, is just a divot or a depression. Popliteal just refers to the back of the knee. And we'll learn later on there's some blood vessels run back there. Sure enough, for my pea brain, they're called the popliteal vessels. Let's try to do some more review, more mnemonics on this slide. Up top, you have a little BSS hanging from the ischial tuberosities, or some BSS hanging from your bottom, because remember, you're sitting on your bottoms right now, you're sitting on your ischial tuberosities. Don't take this the wrong way. You do have to remember some BSS for the test as you're going from lateral to medial across these hammies, but BSS stands for, okay, let's be clear, biceps femoris, semitendinosus, and semimembranosus. So I hope that kind of helps to tie things together. What about actions? All of these cross two joints, so we gotta have double action. At the hip joint, remember we are extending the thigh at the hip. We're straightening it out. At the knee joint, we are flexing the leg at the knee. That's like bringing our foot up towards our bottom. Another great thing I'd like to do here is to remind you that the hammies are the antagonist of the quads. Remember, the quads were the football kicking muscle. Kind of kicked everything up and out, didn't they? Well, the hammies do just the opposite. If you think about it, they kind of pull everything back. Now I really have a pop quiz coming up. You weren't expecting this to come up in this section, were you? But I just had to do it for fun. Yeah, this is fun for me. We're not supposed to be in this part of the body, are we? But let's do a little review. Of course you should learn the lesson of the day. You should learn it that day, and you should know it forwards and backwards before you go to sleep. Maybe you'll even be dreaming about it. And that helps you remember stuff too, believe it or not. But another absolutely key thing to do to help with long-term retention and understanding of material is to build in periodic reviews. And if you do it regularly, it's quick and it's easy while it's still fresh on your mind. You'll see if you do this, it will really help. Let's do it right now. Arrow pops up. Name that muscle in this right lateral view of our cadaver. I hope you would all say biceps brachii. That's right. That's the powerful flexor of the arm and forearm that bodybuilders like to show off when they're doing those curls. And what about on the backside? Arrow pops up. You know what that is? That's the triceps brachii. Extremely powerful extensors of the arm and forearm. So they would be the antagonist muscle group of the biceps brachii. Remember, build in frequent periodic reviews of the material as you go along. It will help you tremendously. We're ready to move along now and dive into some muscles in the leg. Here's some figures from your textbook showing an anterior view of the right leg and a lateral view of the right leg. The muscle on this slide we're going to study with the arrows on it is called the tibialis anterior, and the words pretty much tell you everything. It's called the tibialis because it's running right on the tibia. Anterior tells you it's running anterior to the tibia. Let's break it down. As always, first comes the origin, and conveniently for my pea brain, the tibialis anterior originates from the lateral condyle of the tibia. That makes perfect sense to me. Tibialis originates on tibia. What about insertion? Well, let's follow the grain of the meat down into the tendon of the muscle. Look how it comes way down into the foot and inserts on the first metatarsal. So if anyone asks you, insertion of tibialis anterior is metatarsal number one. Maybe you'd be able to guess the action of this muscle by looking at it. Just picture with this visual those muscle fibers contracting and pulling on that point right there, because of course you know the insertion is where we generally get the movement. We are going to number one, dorsiflex the foot. That means we're going to flex our foot up towards our shin. We're also going to invert our foot. Invert means we're going to turn the sole of our foot in towards the midline of the body. I can't leave this slide without throwing in something of clinical relevance. Something that you should know because you'll hear about it. Something called shin splints. What are shin splints? I had them and they hurt. You'll most commonly see this in runners. Often runners who run on hard surfaces, angled surfaces, maybe they have improper technique, maybe they're not wearing the right kind of sneaker or whatever. And basically think of shin splints as a tendonitis, if you will, of the muscles that are in this anterior compartment of the leg, including especially the tibialis anterior. As always, none of these muscles are complete without looking at the real deal. And here we have our cadaver with an anterior view of the legs, and the red arrow is pointing towards a muscle, and there's no mistake in that one. It's anterior, it's over the tibia. You're all going to call that the tibialis anterior. On the next slide, I have a photograph to demonstrate what inversion is. So focus over here on the photograph to your left. This is showing inversion, where we're turning in the sole of our foot towards the middle of the body. Couple more leg muscles to go. Up on deck right now is the gastrocnemius muscle. Root word gastro means belly, and the person who found this at an autopsy hundreds of years ago, they looked at this muscle on the back of the leg and they said, man, look at those big bellies. I think I'll call it the big belly muscle, and that's basically what they called it. So here we have a posterior view of the right leg, and look at those two big honking bellies of this muscle. That is the gastrocnemius muscle. This is the muscle that bodybuilders love to pump up. It's typically just called the calf muscle, but you can't call it that on test day. I'll just laugh a little bit and write a little smiley face on your paper. You got to write gastrocnemius on a test. We're ready to do our usual players, starting with the origins. The origins of the gastrocnemius muscle include the medial and lateral condyles of the femur dorsally. In other words, it inserts on the backside of both condyles of the femur, where it, of course, is crossing the knee joint. What about insertion? Trace these big beefy muscle bellies down into the tendon. That tendon is going down here to insert in that bone, and so the insertion is the heel bone that you will not call the heel bone. You'll call it the calcaneus. And how does it insert there? By your old friend that probably everybody heard of in eighth grade health class, called the Achilles tendon. Now this tendon called the Achilles tendon has a synonym, and that is the calcaneal tendon. But none of my friends on the weekends when we're out drinking Pepsi call it that. If someone says calcaneal tendon instead of Achilles tendon, I will take their Pepsi, drink it in front of them, and then I will kick them out of the group. Okay, here we are, nearing the last of the muscles we're studying. You have this big knowledge base now. You have this visual in your mind. You should be able to guess what the actions are by just looking at this. We're crossing two joints, so there's got to be double action. What are they? Picture these muscle bellies contracting. First, let's pull on this Achilles tendon. If we yank on that calcaneus with the Achilles tendon, what's going to happen? Well, we're going to what we call plantar flex the foot. In other words, we're going to flex our foot down towards the floor, like planting our foot down in the floor. That's what plantar flexion means. It almost looks like what's happening in this figure here. What's the second action? Up here at the knee joint, of course, if we pull on our fibers there, we're going to flex the leg at the knee. That's like pulling our heel up towards our buttocks. So that's the double action you must know.
Finally, our last muscle is called the soleus. Kind of cool how it got its name. Sole actually refers to a sole fish. Maybe you don't know what a sole fish is, but it's very similar in appearance to a flounder. And probably everyone knows what a flounder looks like. It's a flat fish. This muscle got its name because it's flat like a flounder or like a sole fish. If you see it in lab, and I hope you do, that name fits perfectly. Let's check the figure out to the right. Once again, anterior view right leg and lateral view right leg. Refresh ourselves first with the gastrocnemius we just did. Here's that big bellied muscle on the back of our calf. And then just deep to that, just underneath of that, is this flat muscle like a flounder, like a sole fish, and that's called the soleus. What about the origins? The soleus originates from the head of the fibula and the medial surface of the tibia dorsally. What did I just say in English? This muscle originates from the top backside of both of our leg bones. That's where it starts. Now we follow those fibers downwards into the tendon called the Achilles tendon. That's right. Its fibers also merge into the Achilles tendon and insert on the heel bone that you will not call the heel bone. You will call it the calcaneus. The action of this muscle at this point in time should really be a gimme. I mean, after all, we just sort of this beef is attached to the Achilles tendon, which anchors on the heel bone. If we yank up on that, what do we do with this foot? We flex it down into the ground, right? We plantar flex the foot. So action is plantar flex the foot. No better way to finish this unit off than by using the real deal. Once again, here is Muscle Man. Love using and looking at gross anatomy to help us summarize things, review things, and help us with long-term understanding of this. So here we go. Pop quiz. Arrow pops up on that muscle right there. Got two big bellies seen here on the back of the calf. You know, of course, that's the gastrocnemius muscle. That's the one, of course, the bodybuilders like to get all pumped up. But just remember, it's got them two big bellies. It also crosses two joints, both the knee joint up here and the ankle joint down here. So two big bellies, got to have two big actions, double actions for double bellies. Remember, up top, the gastrocnemius attaches to the medial and lateral condyles of the femur. And the action is to flex the leg at the knee, kind of like lifting your heel up toward your buttocks. Then down here, if we follow the muscle into its nice big Achilles tendon, it anchors on the heel bone that you know is really called the calcaneus. And if we yank up on that, what are we going to do? We're going to plantar flex the foot. We're going to plant our foot and toes down into the ground. It's kind of like that exercise toe raises. When you do toe raises, you can feel the contraction of that muscle. It almost looks like this cadaver is trying to do toe raises, even though, of course, he really can't. What about the other muscle on this slide? Here comes up an arrow. Name that muscle.
deep to the gastrocnemius, nice flat muscle like a flounder or like somebody thought a sole fish. Of course, you're all going to call that the soleus. Remember, the soleus with an S only crosses a single joint with an S, so single action. It blends into the tendon called the Achilles tendon, hooks into the calcaneus or the heel bone, and again, when we pull up on that, we're going to plantar flex our foot. So again, helps us doing those toe raises. Before we leave this slide, I want to throw in some more clinical stuff. Look at that Achilles tendon. Tendons in general look almost white, don't they? Why? What are they missing? I should say they have a lack of blood vessels, a very poor blood supply. The short story on blood vessels is in with the good and out with the bad. So if we damage tissues like tendons, we can't bring in the goodies to help repair them. Therefore, Achilles tendon injuries are very hard to fix. That's why they're often career-ending injuries in professional athletes or require prolonged rehabilitation, multiple surgeries, and so forth.
Another clinical entity I want to mention before we leave this unit, what is plantar fasciitis? Because you'll probably see a lot of it. It is what it says. It is plantar, refers to the bottom of the foot. There's fascia there. You know, fascia is dense connective tissue, and itis means an inflammation. So it's an inflammation of the connective tissue on the bottom of the foot. Where do we see it most commonly? In runners who are constantly pounding away on the pavement. They get an inflammation there. The common name for this is painful heel syndrome, and you'll all see it. I hope you liked this slide to end things. I love the clinical deals to kind of bring it down to earth, make it seem real, and show you the application of this. Remember, you're not just trying to get an A, you're trying to understand it and be able to help people later on down the road. That's the end of this one. See you on the next segment.